download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
It is indeed that easy to find any of the past episodes. We got over 400 episodes that are up on the Monday Night Talk podcast site. It's as easy as searching for us in iTunes, as Joe had told you, or just going onto the ATD website, 959WATD.com. Our next guest joining us right now is a gentleman who wasn't necessarily running for re-election. He didn't necessarily have an opponent, but he did run for re-election, but yet he was also running a statewide campaign in regards to indexing of the gas tax. We have State Representative Jeff Deal joining us for the very first time since the elections. Welcome back to Monday Night Talk.
Hey, Kevin. Hey, Joe. Good to see you guys, and thanks for having me in. Yeah, that was a great statewide campaign. Ballot question one to repeal the automatic indexing of the gas tax. The citizens spoke. We had a six-point margin of victory, so it was really a great win for the people.
It's been well, and if you were to look at the Republican Party, you saw a little bit of a domino effect here on the South Shore. The Republicans on the South Shore got a little help.
Can I brag a little bit about this? I got the spreadsheet from the state Secretary of State's office, and the top performing town of the entire state was the town of Hanson. Now, I don't represent that, but my wife has a business in Hanson. And the other thing is, my other three towns, Abington, Whitman, East Bridgewater, all were in the top 20 as far as voting for to repeal the automatic gas tax indexing. So I was very happy that my district and the region supported the effort so much. And really, though, it was key to getting across the state to spread the message, because, you know, Western Mass wasn't necessarily familiar with it. You know, when you live around Boston, you really see these issues a little bit more clearly in focus, and it took a while to educate people.
You know, I heard a lot of people that were actually surprised about how close it was. A lot of people thought it would actually be a larger spread. Did that take you by surprise as well?
It didn't, and we knew that was a problem, because there was a poll that came out prior to the election day that said 36% of the people were going to vote yes to repeal, but 63% wanted to repeal it. So they didn't understand that a yes vote meant to repeal the index.
There's confusion there.
Yeah, a double negative almost.
Exactly. Yeah. And what I ended up getting letters in the mail saying, hey, I did the right thing. I voted no for the gas tax indexing. I had to reply back. Well, unfortunately, it was a yes vote that did it. But ultimately, we carried the day anyway.
Do you think if there was less confusion that the number that there could have been a little bit more separation?
Yeah, no, definitely. And you know, the other interesting thing, we outperformed the governor-elect by 40,000 votes. So I'm not saying that we're more important than the governor-elect, but we certainly had an issue that I think helped him, and his campaign certainly picked up on that. The people that he was talking about it in favor of the repealing of it, and the PAC that supported him had three or four ads that actually featured the gas tax as an issue. So we also sort of got some help with him taking up the campaign and crusade as well.
Well, it hit the national spotlight, too, as one of the top ballot issues across the country.
Well, you know, another great thing, too, I found out from Grover Nordquist, who speaks to states and governors all the time, one governor called him after the election and said, this probably means I can't enact a CPI indexing of gas tax in my state. He said, no, I wouldn't. If bluest of blue states, Massachusetts, repeals the indexing, I wouldn't try it anywhere else. And so we think we have set the bar of, you probably don't want to go about making a tax go up automatically without a vote, in this case, the gas tax.
Before we close the door on this, so what has to happen now? Is this something that it's automatically said and done? You don't have to worry about it going up another 3 cents when there's a fluctuation in inflation.
The only thing that has to happen now is that the governor's council has to certify that the ballot question passed, you know, based on what the Secretary of State's numbers give them. So that's the only official legal hurdle, and then it's enacted. And at that point, if people feel we need more transportation funds, we'll take the regular vote that we take on these things. And you know, at the same time, I also think there's a lot of efficiencies we can look for in Mass DOT and MBTA.
Okay, let's talk about, I called it earlier on when I was speaking with Peter Brown, kind of the newest crusade, and that is, I was surprised to see in the media over the past week and a half that there's a proposed, I see we're going to see an uptick in some of the pay that legislators get, I guess. Explain to me what's going on here. Is this like an automatic raise that happens for legislators? How is this being instituted?
Well, actually, what happened back in 1998, there was a constitutional ballot question that actually made it so that legislators never voted on their salary anymore. It would be indexed to the median household income, and it would go up or down. So in 2012, for example, the average household income went down 1.8%. So, you know, my salary, everybody's salary went down about $1,100, $1,200, somewhere in that neighborhood. What happened was in this last fiscal year 15 budget, a commission was authorized and formed and ultimately came up with some recommendations for legislative pay increases. Now, it's not for rank and file members, you know, state reps or state senators. It's actually going right to the top for governor, but also
constitutional officers.
Yep, all constitutional, as well as the speaker and senate president. So let me just—it's not slightly an uptick. It's a pretty significant amount.
Okay,
especially the speaker, who's at $102,000, it goes to $175,000. So that's that's a roughly 75%, you know, increase in pay at a time.
I'd love to get that.
That's a small vehicle.
Yeah, at a time when you're talking about you know, $329 million in 9C cuts being proposed by the governor. So you know, I caught wind that this commission was actually going to be reporting out their findings as well as language to make the changes legislatively, and I committed at that point to block it in informal sessions, because this is the same type of thing as the gas tax issue. We need our legislators to be on record as voting for this, I think. Personally, voting for such a massive, it's a pretty good amount of spending annually. It's about $1 million more each year. And I think we need to have the next session come in and do their job of approving or not approving what this commission found. And so I'm really just asking for the same thing on the gas tax, a vote by the legislature to see if we can debate, you know, whether there's merit to increase this as much. And, you know, it does affect other things like per diems. It eliminates those, but it increases stipends. So, you know, there's a cut of $300,000 for per diems, but there's an add of $800,000 for the stipends. So it's a net, you know, cost increase of $500,000 or $500,000. And so these aren't small things, and these are things that we're basically elected to vote on, which is, you know, where you spend your money. And I think we need to have that vote. So with just about, you know, 4 weeks left in the session, and we're in informals now, which means any one legislator can go in and block it because there's no quorum. I've been going in now twice, and I'll continue to go for the rest of the month to informals and monitor to make sure that this doesn't go through.
There's no sneaky cracking of the gavel, anything like that, where this thing slides through.
Yeah, and I hate to think that that's the, you know, unfortunately the way things go, but sometimes things do pass that way.
Could there be a call for an emergency session to deal with this, or is this something that's going to get dealt with unless with the new members of the House and Senate that will deal with this?
Yeah, it's unlikely that the Speaker would and Senate President would call for full sessions, but there's always a possibility. You never know.
Is this something that is actually going to be, but this is going to be enacted? This is going to happen?
No. This is actually just recommendations, and then they've drafted suggested legislation. And what we're, you know, looking to do is, what I'm looking to do is make it come up for a vote, which means we can do amendments to adjust this and see if, you know, let's have the discussion. For example, New Hampshire pays their legislators about $100 a year, plus they get, I guess, free lift tickets to ski resorts, right? But in states like Pennsylvania, they make more like $90,000. So, you know, where's the medium? Do you want to make this a fully professional legislature, or do you want to make it a true part-time legislature that comes in, maybe debates the budget, and then does their regular job the rest of the year?
Well, I did cut just a couple of numbers I want to throw out, and I want to thank Christine James for giving me this bit of information. According to this this advisory board, they're recommending that the governor's annual pay go up to $250,000, while also giving out other raises. I guess they want to say the governor's, actually it says here, the pay should increase from 151
to 185
plus a new $65,000 housing allowance.
Right. And we don't have a governor's mansion. That's why they've thrown that in there. And, you know, Governor-elect Baker has already indicated that, first of all, he's not for this increase of the legislative pay, but also that he would not want to take that $65,000 housing stipend.
And if folks want to weigh in on this while we're talking about it, 781-837-4900. Another quick note here is that the commission says the higher pay would help attract talented individuals to state government. As it stands, there are 1,250 state employees who currently earn more than our current governor.
And that's a great point. And
what do you think of that?
Well, see, that's interesting, because the commission that was actually led by UMass Boston employees, and there were several quasi and public employees that were on this commission, who get affected by you know, the decisions made by the leadership who they want to give raises to. You know, their base salary is determined by that, or their funding for their schools are determined by these legislators they're going to give pay raises to. So that's a little bit of a red flag for me too. But the other thing, that 1254 of employees that make more than the governor, it's interesting. Also, the UMass system is notorious for earning the most of all state employees. 313 UMass employees make more than $200,000, and 224 are from the UMass school system. And just so you know, throwing out the million-dollar coaches' salaries in the UMass, you've got $600,000, $700,000, $800,000 salaries for department heads, professors. You know, these guys are tenured. You're saying that, you know, colleges is too expensive for kids, but you're making massive amounts of money in these in these public universities, and at the same time now turning around and giving the speaker a 75% pay increase at a time when the governor's cutting, you know, local aid by $329 million.
Joe, you have to weigh in. We got a call. We actually got to have a call, but Joe, go ahead, weigh in, please.
No, I was just going to say, was there any justification, or was there any reason given to the numbers? Was there any type of, like you said earlier, that the current salaries are indexed?
It's an advisory board. So
was the advisory board, did they disclose why they came up with these, you know, like, for example, 75% increases, or other than what Kevin mentioned?
Yeah, I mean, they looked at basically national averages for different positions, things like that. You know, for example, the governor currently is at 20, our governor is 26 out of 50 as far as pay. They want to bump him up to 10%, you know, in the top 10% for pay. Now, you know, again, that's all well and good, but you know, the optics on this, at a time when people aren't exactly having their right. household incomes go up.
But the economy's just getting back up on its
feet.
Yeah,
yeah, and you're doing this. I think this is the wrong time to be trying to pass, you know, a pretty massive increase like this. It's pretty large because it's also the pension that you think about afterwards. You know, for every dollar that somebody has an increase in salary, when they retire, there's 80, you know, 80 cents of that then goes to their pension.
Top 3 years.
And they actually did not, this report did not factor in the cost of pension liability in the long run with this. That was one thing they omitted.
Which Massachusetts, I believe, is amongst the most unfunded liability states in the country.
$22 billion at least at this point.
And I believe we have someone on the line. Who's there, caller?
Who's there? You told me to call in.
Is this the guy that I read on the inside track about your fight for the rock and roll, the state's rock song?
Well, I know you've covered that before, but they did an update.
You're still waiting for the Hail Mary.
Well, if we could get someone with some juice in the house, like maybe Rep Deal, to push that thing along, we'd get it done.
I'll block any attempt to not make the other song. State song.
We have state senator
Marty Walsh. Marty Walsh was the house sponsor of that. And once he left, we lost a little momentum.
So we have State Senator Bob Hedlund joining us. Senator, well, congratulations on your election being reelected.
Thank you.
I'm sure you want to weigh in on this particular issue.
Well, yeah. I mean, thanks for having me. And I just got a call from the Patriot Ledger on this issue, and I guess a lot of our colleagues who usually seek the limelight aren't returning calls and have chosen not to speak on this issue. Surprise, surprise. But, yeah, I heard some of what Representative Deal had to say, and I agree with the points that he made. This is just a bad time for this. I think it's an inordinate amount of an increase. And to be honest with you, and I've been in the legislature a lot longer than Representative Deal, I've seen the requirements on the job and the workload decline. When you have the one party control of the legislature and things being determined in caucus behind closed doors, the amount of time that was actually debated has diminished significantly. I mean, I can't quantify it scientifically, but you know, if you said half, I'd buy into that, the amount of time we're actually in debate. The other thing is, you know, if you're not comfortable with the salary that's offered, then don't seek the position. And I don't see, at least for the executive branch, we had a very talented number of people run for that and seek that office in recent years on both sides of the aisle, maybe present governor excluded, but a lot of quality people have sought that position. They know what the salary is. And as far as the legislative, great point about the pensions that the commission doesn't mention. And also, you know, we've already got a built-in pay raise. We're the only legislative body in the world with a constitutionally guaranteed pay raise already. And you look at people's ethics reports who serve in the legislature, many make significant outside incomes already. And I think that what we ought to do is maybe take a look at that part of the equation. I know they do for the executive branch. And I think it's a bad situation if you're going to have the Senate President and Speaker have inordinately a higher salary than the people they serve with. I don't think that sets a good message or a good tone. So those are just a few of the points, I think, on this pay raise issue. And what Ira Jackson and his cohorts on the commission ought to do, Kevin, is maybe reconvene and take a look at the bloated state salaries that Jeff was just talking about, and maybe make some adjustments there rather than use that as a justification for raising salaries elsewhere.
Senator Hedlund, Jeff Deal here, and thanks for, everything you're saying and the leadership you provided for years is really the reason I ran and now able to do some work myself on this. You mentioned a great point, which is the fact that this recommendation also includes restriction from outside income for the Senate President and Speaker, as well as all the constitutional officers. And I think one thing we should look at is restricting, you know, leadership positions down the line from outside income as well, potentially. You know, the Ways and Means Chairs.
Why stop there, Jeff? If we're considered a full-time legislature now, which, by the way, most legislatures in the country are not. People forget that. And why don't we take the average of New England states for salaries and factor that and come up with an average for Massachusetts, and you'd see a significant drop. You know, $300 a year in New Hampshire. They're actual, real citizen legislators. We're here. In 1978, when they reapportioned the legislature, they said they wanted to, quote-unquote, professionalize the legislature. Well, the only thing we've done is professionalize staff. Everything is staff-driven up there right now. I've seen the change. And, you know, I could make an argument for an increase in salaries for legislators if you eliminated staff, okay, limited the amount of staff we have, and limit outside income, right. And then you've got a justification for it.
Yeah, I mean, you've got Ways and Means Chairs making $25,000 above their base pay plus the stipend. So, you know, it isn't as poorly paying as people want to paint it out to be. But I didn't run, like you said, for a career. It was a calling. And, you know, I knew what the pay was. And I learned to adapt to the difference of what I was making before. And I think who should run if they don't think they can live off that?
So listen, I haven't read the report yet, okay? But I guarantee there's no mention of staff. And why that's important is, and the Speaker just handed out staff salary increases, as Jeff knows, over in the House. But what's important about discussing staff, you know, when I went up there, there were state reps who had one staffer, and you've got some that have four or five now. And these aren't even people who chair significant committees. And that frees up the legislator to do other things and make the outside income that they're making. And now you want to give them raises. You know, so if you were to save money elsewhere, cut the amount of staff people have, because, again, everything is staff-driven up there.
Mm.
We're basically, in many cases, we're figureheads because of the amount of staff that's crawling around that building now, and maybe approach it that way. And these things are interconnected, but I don't think the report makes mention of that.
So I have to ask both of you. We'll start with State Rep. Jeff Deal. So what has to happen next, and how does the governor-elect play a role in this?
Well, so what the commission was allowed to do is come up with they can actually write some legislation that they could theoretically try to pass during session. What I'm going to do is block it during informal and ask for a pass. If they don't do that, have to hold up informal session until, you know, the next session is sworn in. And at that point, I think the governor and the House and Senate president can decide to bring it up in chamber as a bill for us to make amendments, have the discussion, and then see if the governor would go for it. And I think that's the next step.
Hey, what a surprise, guys. What a surprise, too, that this was released right after an election, during the holidays, and these folks who want this would love to see it on a lame duck governor's desk to be signed. But I don't think anything is going to get to him, as Jeff points out. I don't think they would have the gall to even bring this up, because this would be something folks would even remember 2 years later in the next election cycle.
Is this something that the new Senate president would even want to touch, or do you think this is something that Rosenberg would want to stay away from?
Well, considering that he was the main driver to put the commission together, I think he'd want to touch it. This was his baby for the last couple of years. This was his, I believe it was his legislation that created the commission.
Is this
there's your answer.
Is this veto-proof?
I have no idea. I have no idea. The Democrats, I mean, when they want to get the votes, they got the votes to override vetoes. I mean,
but it's not like
that's been the case. That's been the case under every Republican governor we've had.
But it's not like you have a Democrat in the corner office. You will now have a Republican for governor, and he would have to want to put his signature on it.
Right. But they could override him.
The only
and then you'll have legislators that will vote to override them and then probably take another covering vote when an election rolls around, lie to the people and say they were against it.
You know, the only thing that we have in our favor, too, is that if it can't get enacted this session, then nobody benefits financially next session, because if they pass it next session, they can't get those bonuses or increases during that session. So it would be the following session. Hopefully that there would be some enthusiasm to die down, at least on the Speaker DeLeo's part, because this is his final term. He's term limited.
You know, that's what's happened at the federal level. That's the so-called lost amendment that was passed in a constitutional convention early on, I believe, and it was never... It was discovered later. An interesting story on that. That's for another time. But that's the case with federal pay raises. And there was a reaffirmation back in the 90s of the so-called lost amendment where pay raise could not take effect until the next session.
I guess I would add, last thing I would ask you, Senator, before we let you go, any goals that you're hoping for this next legislative session? Anything that you hope that the lawmakers up on Beacon Hill will tackle?
Yeah, some of the same stuff in the past session. How about some 40B reform? How about, the public benefit verification for public benefit for public housing, welfare reform? Some of the things that we keep debating that the Democrats refuse to enact. It seems to me that the people I interact with want to see happen. Those are a couple highlights. And of course, we got to deal immediately out of the gate with this budget deficit that we have.
Yeah, was it $350 million around there?
Around there.
Senator, as always, we look forward to having you back on soon.
Thanks for having me.
We got it. There he is. State Senator Bob Hedlund joining us for a few moments. And in studio remains State Representative Jeff Deal. How about as far as with you, any goals that you're hoping that some of the folks in the House and the Senate will set? Do you agree with the Senator?
Yeah, I mean, actually, I think we've the same thing the Senator was talking about. On top of that, I think we actually have to look at our own immigration issues as far as how we process people in the state. We create an artificial backlog with underfunding state departments and agencies that are supposed to do that. And we could actually have people registered legal, but we don't want to do that. There's a sort of hidden reasons that we don't do that. So I think there's that. But on top of that, like the Senator said, and what the governor-elect is about to deal with is this budget gap. And what's really crazy is, you know, a year ago, the governor made 9 C cuts just like this. Then revenue started coming in like a lion, and we finished last fiscal year at $570 million above benchmark, more than we expected. The governor only restored $20 million of the $200 million he cut, 10%. If he's cutting, $329 million now, I expect that if we have the revenue come in like we did last time, once you get the shopping and capital gains and all the things from the second, third quarter of the fiscal year, that's when the revenue start really coming in. Then we should restore those cuts if he actually does go through and make them.
Anything that you're excited for? I mean, this The Republicans have made gains in both the House, the Senate, and again, you governor-elect is a Republican, as is the lieutenant governor. You got to be excited for this legislative session. That there's got to be a bit more balance, a little bit. There's going to be more balance than it has been in previous years.
You know, it's funny when you talk about people who are fiscally conservative, what gets them excited is pretty mundane, boring stuff. I like the fact that the governor-elect is somebody who comes from the healthcare industry, is going to probably help us get healthcare costs that are spiraling out of control year after year under control. I like the fact that he's going to, make education a big priority on making sure that we're funding schools the right way.
That's important.
It is. I mean, I really am excited for pretty much the fact that we're going to make the trains run on time in Massachusetts, which has been long in coming. And I think that's, for me, a worthy goal is just to kind of be in the background and make things work.
Anything we overlooked asking in regards to this potential pay raises that you feel needs to be touched upon for a moment before we take a break?
No. I think what I need to do is just get up there, stay in informal, make sure that this does get blocked until next session, and then we have our appropriate debate when the time comes.
Joe, anything you want to say in closing? Because I know you're going to be heading out the door at the top of the hour.
Yeah, no, I think this is definitely one of those issues where the universal feeling that I get from talking to people about this issue, because this isn't the first time it's come up over the years, and it's pretty universal. Why do we need to pay our legislators more without knowing why we should be paying them more? And I think this is a perfect example of one of those times. I'm glad to see, Jeff, that you're taking a lead on at least monitoring what's going on in House sessions.
I'm sorry, but just to see this number, I think it's alarming to know that there's nearly 1,300 people who make more than our governor.
Well, you remember,
it's alarming.
You remember not too long ago that the sign hangers scam was caught, where they were paying sign hangers and toll takers six-figure salaries in some cases, and not to forget the Massport chief who ran out of the state with $280,000 in a pension and $400,000 in sick days.
So you're not surprised that public employees that are put on this commission come up with a solution of, let's not lower those salaries, let's just increase the salary of the governor so everybody's salaries now fall under that umbrella. I mean, let's look at, you know, reality here. People aren't in the private sector making the same that's being made in the public sector.
People are struggling.
For the first time ever, public sector salaries are higher on average than private sector.
And the benefits tend to be better. It used to be that the benefits were better and the pay was lower. Then things kind of pendulum swung to the even pay is better.
Yep.
And guaranteed jobs.
True.
Yeah, well, it's a sign of the times, unfortunately. It definitely is. Joe, we want to thank you for hanging out, hanging with us.
I'll see everybody next week.
You got it, definitely. Next week, again, as I had mentioned earlier, Peter Brown will be hanging out with us. And
Peter Brown from Whitman?
No, Peter Brown from Tiny and Sons.
That Peter Brown.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Peter Browns that are doing some good stuff out there.
They are. They definitely are. We will step aside, and when we come back, we are going to look forward to speaking with Jane Velez Mitchell, host and content editor for JaneUnchained.com. Don't go anywhere.
The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.